אני שייך, הלב נמשך, אני בוכה להישאר, הכל כדאי, אני חי בארץ ישראל. This is my home, this is the place to be, מרגיש את אלוקיי גם בקרבי, אז תעלה אחי ושב איתי. This is my home, זה המקום שלי.
You're listening to the Bring Them Home Aliyah podcast, hosted by Josh Wander.
Welcome back to Bring Them Home. This is Josh Wander from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh. I'm here with Rav Nachman Kahana of Yerushalayim, and he's telling me offline that this is a very auspicious day. Why is this a very auspicious day, Rav Nachman?
This is...
You need your mic.
The word is auspicious.
Your mic.
Okay, shalom, everybody. The word auspicious is a midget. There is not even a word to say what kind of great day this is. This is the day where Hashem said, "Vayi Or," the day of the Big Bang, according to scientific terms. Make a cheshbon, make a simple calculation. It's Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday was Aleph Tishrei. So if you go to Sunday, it's Kaf Hei Elul. Kaf Hei Elul was the day that Hashem decided to make the world. There's a question over here. Was it necessary to make the world? Was it a good thing to make the world? Anyway, there's machloket between Hillel and Shammai. Was it good that Hashem made people or not? And they argued 2.5 years about it, as I'll say in the end, they decided it's not good for a person to be born, but if he's born already, he should yafashpesh for myself, he should live a good life, try to live a decent life. There's an interesting medrash that Hashem says, Loshen Rabbim, said in the plural, Nasa Adam Betzameinu Kidmuteinu, let us make a man in our image. The medrash says, who was Hashem talking to? He's talking to the angels. He's bringing before the committee of the constitutional committee made of angels, said, should we make a man or not make a man? Just leave it. Let's stop with a gorilla and not make the man. Not go any further than that. And there's debate among the angels. The angels of chesed, compassion, said yes, because people do chesedim. People do compassionate things. Shalom said no, because people are fighting all the time. I think, I'm not mistaken, that we're probably the only species in the world that will make one kill each other. There could be other species because of something. But interesting to know.
For no reason.
No reason. That's interesting that the shorish of the word milchama, war, is the word lechem. Because most wars have to do with economic reasons or expansion, which is in the end, it always comes to economic things. In any event, then Emet says to Hashem, don't make man because man is not Emet. Man is not truthful. And then the Medrash says something interesting. It says, Hashem took Emet and threw him down to the earth. And it says, Ki Emet me'eretz titzmach, that truth will grow from the land. Hashem is probably talking about the Sanhedrin, which is the home of truth in the world. In any event, Hashem made human beings and gave Moshe Rabbeinu, like the Rambam explains in Hilchot Melachim, the Rambam was not an emissary of the Jewish people to Hashem or Hashem to the Jewish people. Moshe Rabbeinu was an emissary of humanity to Hashem. When he came down from the mountain, he gave the Gentiles 7 mitzvot, like they say, keep the 7 and go to heaven, maybe. And we got 613 mitzvot. But the Gemara in Chulin says that the 7 are generalities, but it expands to about 100. And then the Gemara says in Avodah Zarah, the first page, it says that Hashem saw the Goyim are not even capable of keeping these 7 in a serious manner. So he reduced the demand of the Goyim. The demand is not so great because you can't demand something which you're not going to get bechlal, no potential. And the level of a goyim when he keeps the mitzvah is like the level of someone who volunteers and not the level of someone who has to do it. In any event, you don't have to have a lot of proof to say that we, humanity, have come to the point of where the six nations in the world have hydrogen bombs. Hydrogen bomb is totally, totally bigger and stronger than the small atomic bomb that was thrown on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Although the father of the atomic bomb and the fission bomb and the fusion bomb are Jews. And the man that theorized the whole thing is Einstein. That energy, matter is energy, condensed energy, and comes to matter and can release the energy in anything, but it's easier to do it with uranium. A point I'm trying to make is that we have, after 5,781 years, humanity is not far from the ability to destroy everything in the world. I recall, I think it was the 60s or 70s, there was an agreement between the United States and Russia about how many nuclear weapons each side can have. Russia had the ability to kill every man, woman, and children 200 times over. America had only 100 times. So America wanted parity. We also want to be able to kill everyone 200 times. 100 times is not enough. And they argued about that in Geneva. Now, so it comes out, even Hashem himself, he was like regretted making man. That's why he brought about the deluge, the flood of Noah. Destroyed humanity, he said, because it can't go on. And then he saved Noah, and humanity again rebuilt itself from his three sons. And again, we just don't understand. And the only saving grace that Hashem has, the Jewish people. It took the Jews, even though we have all kind of our mishigas that we have, but we have the potential, we are loyal, no matter what, to be able to function such terrible circumstances. Anti-Semitism or Judenhass, it's called, and still remain favorable to Hashem. Which nation could have done it? No one could have done it. Only we can do it. I was saying, okay, anyway, I recall saying a few weeks ago that there was a French king a little bit more enlightened than the other kings, and he asked a philosopher, bring me proof that there was a God. The philosopher said, I'll give you a proof in one word. What is it? The Jews. If the Jews are still alive today, there's a God in the world. And I say, I go one step further. How do we know that Hashem is religious Zionist? He did not Israel. He brought us back here. He's a Zionist. He gave us an army. He gave us wealth. He gave us a country. If you want to see the Gula in action, don't go to the Beis Medrash. Go to Machan Yehuda, to the Shuk, and see the richness of this country. Now, I didn't say it. I never said such a thing. A Pasuk Mecheskel. Hezekiah says, how do you know the Gula is coming? When the bounty, the richness of the land comes forth. And we have that today. Now, what I want to speak about, the United States is being hit by natural disasters. The West Coast, I read an article, is slowly turning into a desert. Because of the forest fires, and the small amount of water, I think Lake Tahoe is drying up or something, and that's supposed to be a part of the Colorado River. And anyway, the West is drying up, and the other parts of the country there are tornadoes, and there's flooding. That's like now in the East, and things are going on. Why is this happening to America? America's a good country. Why they're not the worst of the bunch. I say there are two kinds of enemies that the Jewish people have. One kind of enemy is an enemy that has a reason. There's a reason to fight us. For example, Moab, they felt threatened because the Jews were coming to Eretz Israel, and they called on Balak, called on Bilam to come and curse the Jews because they felt threatened. That's a legitimate enemy. But then there's someone which is worse than being an enemy. It's that someone that betrays you. Your friend, and he betrays you. There were countries that betrayed the Jewish people. Yehuda Maccabee made a bond with the Romans. The Romans helped Yehuda Maccabee defeat the Greeks. And what happened? There was good relations for 19 years. After it turned sour, and then they turned upon us, the Romans, and destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. They betrayed us. So what was Hashem's answer to the Romans? They're not here anymore. The United States betrayed the Jewish people. Being good and nice and everything. First of all, they took back their vote where they recognized the partition plan, 1947, 48. And then he put down an arms embargo. We were fighting for our lives. I recall one day, my parents were very active in getting around the arms embargo, collecting money and buying weapons and sending it to Eretz Israel in 46, 47. I was a little boy. I came home one day and I saw my parents like distraught, my brother also. What happened? There's a big arms cachet waiting to go to Eretz Israel on the roof of Chabad 770, and the FBI found it. And all those millions of dollars was, you couldn't send a bullet here when the Jews are struggling for our lives. Then, of course, America never bombed once the tracks leading concentration camps. And now what's happening now, the United States wants to open up another consulate in Yerushalayim to serve the Arabs. Saying, what is it implying? There's no city in the world where America has two consulates. In one city, the city has a consulate and an embassy. By putting up a second consulate, one for us in the West and one for the Arabs in the East, they're saying Yerushalayim is a divided city. That's stabbing in the back. That's a betrayal. With the smiles and nice and everything, betrayal. Anyway, you should know that if you have an enemy, you can fight the enemy. But the worst enemy is a hypocrite. That shows that he's like a friend, but then he goes against you. And America, that's the way it is.
A lot of people would look from there at us and say the tragedies that are happening to them also happen here in Eretz Israel. We had tragedies like we saw in Meron. We've had terrorist attacks and wars. So what's the difference between being here and being there?
The difference is that Eretz is like a baby. It cries and cries and it grows all the time. But these things happen in Chutz Eretz, the country doesn't continue to grow. The country suffers. We have our problems. We have our religious problems at Hashem. But you take a look at the statistics of the country. The gross national product last year grew by 5%. With the worth of Corona. And there was a survey in the country, in the world, what countries are the people the most the happiest? And Israel came out, I think, 4 or 5. That's with anti-Semitism. People are happier. We always have problems. But we don't have that kind of, thank God, we don't have the things that the United States have. Tornadoes and fantastic floods. And then there's no water on one end. We have problems. War is war. Because the Arabs are the Arabs and the Jews are the Jews, and no one's going to change. And they say that we stole their country, and we say, let's be friends.
I would dare say that the happiest people in this country are probably the Arabs. They know that they don't have to be under the dictatorships that all the other Arab nations are under.
Not only that, and Arabs have a lot of rights here. They're criminals. they go to court and the judges do not give them, don't give them full punishment. Or judges are afraid because they know if they're going to deal with them harshly, they'll blow up the houses. That's a fact. See, the Arabs, by their very nature, like Sarah Imenu, saw that's per adam, a wild beast. They're wild. You can see it even just on the way they drive the cars. You can see an Arab driver and a Jewish driver. It's just blatant. It's just because there's a wildness in them. And then, of course, the killings that go on every day. An Arab is murdered by an Arab. That's what they are. They're just not. Sarah knew, send Yishmael away. He cannot be with Yitzchak. Same thing here. No matter what you give to them, how good you are, with Jews and the Arabs just cannot live together. It's just water and oil. Just doesn't go together.
I don't think they would ever. It wouldn't be politically correct to release these statistics, but I believe that the vast majority of fatal accidents here in Israel are related to Arab drivers. You find them over and over again that the Arab drivers are the ones that are. Uh-huh. Somehow involved in the fatal accident, so there's no question about it.
The wildness, and also the criminality. I had a cousin who was a judge, and she was a woman. She told me that there was a time where the Moroccans, Jewish Moroccans, they were the majority of cases that came before criminal court, and then it became. The Russians, Russian Aliyah, and now it's the Arabs. When you hear about a murder case in Israel, chances are it's a Russian or an Arab.
I think they've given up prosecuting a lot of the cases that Arab on Arab violence.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, where does that bring it? Bring us to the end of 5,781, waiting for 82. 81 was not a very auspicious. Not a very distinguished year. But it's here, Baruch Hashem, 1 year closer to the Beit HaMikdash. And the statistics, the religious statistics, very interesting. They made a census. They saw the census divided our community into Chilonim, people who are secular, so-called, and then traditional, then Dati Lumi, the Zionists, and Haredim. Ask them questions. Are you going to fast in Yom Kippur? The majority of the secular said yes. The traditional, certainly, and the Tulamin, certainly yes. Ask questions about going to make a Suda in Rosh Hashanah. And what kind of things have to do with being Jewish? The Haredim, the Chilonim came out very high. Of course, you always have that sick, like in every bell-shaped curve, you have the extremes. But extremes are small. You have the leftists who are actually the students of the American, what's going on today in America, but they're small, they're vocal, but they don't have a chance. It's going to be another few years. Are going to be this country will be Haredim and Arabs. That seems statistically, and we have to find an answer to get rid of the Arabs. They just don't belong here, that's all.
I had a great idea. I mentioned it at the Kiddush last Shabbos. I said when I'm appointed to be the minister of Aliyah and absorption, my first act I'm going to do is going to start charging Jews to make Aliyah. I said that when things are free, people don't pay. They don't see any worth of it. They say, you know, it's not worth anything. It's free. You know, the Sachnut, the Jewish agency, has just been so busy over the past decade saying, we're going to give you everything. We're going to give you a free flight. We're going to bring you here. We're going to give you housing. We're going to give you this. What's it worth? We know if they're giving me it for free and they're giving this, obviously it's not worth very much. This actually happened. I remember when the Breslover materials used to be given out in the streets for free, and they used to find them. But nobody ever paid attention, and all of a sudden they figured out if they charge a couple shekels for it, so people will see this, it's worth something. So I said, you know what, this is what I think. The first year, there'll be a tax, $50,000 to make Aliyah. for those that can't afford it, there'll be a special committee that'll make a discount for people that can't afford it. But people that can afford it, $50,000. That will be doubled every year. So you know you want to do it quickly, because if you don't get it done the first year, it's going to be $100,000 the next year. It's going to be $200,000 next year, $400,000. And that money that is being paid by the Olim Chadashim to come will be used to send the Arabs, to give to the Arabs a goodbye present to leave the country. I think it's a perfect budget, a balanced budget to solve both problems.
Very great idea, but I can promise you two things. This is not going to happen, and that's not going to happen.
I'm not going to be appointed the minister of
and that
Aliyah.
That wasn't not going to happen. But I also had an idea to simply limit immigration to Israel. Not everybody can come at the time you want to come. 100,000 a year, that's all. People be knocking down the doors of the Israeli consulate in New York to get a coming out of the air.
You see it now with visiting rights. People want to come here and they want to visit, and everybody's going crazy that they're blocking people from coming in their rights. Who is this Medinat Yisrael to restrict a Jewish Jew from coming and visiting the Holy Land?
I said a long time ago, I predicted, I didn't know exactly how it was going to be. I didn't know how to dot the I's and cross the T's, but it's going to be not going to be open doors anymore. Of course, open doors is like it's limited. It's like a busha. Open, it's like I said, cheap. But now it's limited. I also said something else. I predict it's going to be restoration of the draft in the United States, going to draft Jewish boys and Jewish girls. Instead of going to Kambi Yavna and the Mechlala or something, be going to the army. Okay. But this can happen. Because first, the United States Army is not on the level. Today's army, you have to have a sophisticated army. And the people volunteering, not all of them are very sophisticated, if you know what I mean. And after you have people that have education.
Look at the blow in morale that they've had after Afghanistan, and how I'm sure that's going to affect the amount of people that are volunteering, if they know that they're going to be not going to be, the government is not going to have their backs and doesn't care if their own soldiers are killed in battle, then I'm sure that's going to affect it as well.
Well, we'll see what kind of year is going to be next year. But the next 10 years are going to be very, very interesting in the world.
The Gemara says in Sanhedrin, Kolos b'shishi, so there's going to be sounds in the sixth year, which is this year, then we're finishing it now.
Threats? Threats, yeah.
And there's going to be milchamos, there's going to be wars in Shemitah, in Shvis, in the seventh year. And Ben David will come in the eighth year. What does that mean to Rav Nachman?
It means what it says. It's going to be staggered. It's going to be a period of understanding, that's Chochmah. And then Shem brings the Jews. After Shoah, Jewish people were sick. We're sick physically and mentally and spiritually. Find out what happened to us. Rafaino Shem and Erafe. Do I have to Kabba Shofar Gadol? Boy, it's a big shofar called out for our redemption. And then build Yerushalayim. We see it. Yerushalayim is being built little by little. There's so much Torah today. Outside the Kim and Chassidim, so much Torah today being learned in Eretz Israel. I mean, it hits you in the face. And I'd like to read to you what I wrote, only part of what I wrote this week. We might be entering the period of Hashem's retribution, what the Gentiles had done to us. When it happens, the Jewish communities in the Galut will not be immune. The faith will not be concerted establishment anti-Semitism, but rather ground roots street violence. When the genie of hate is released, the blacks and Muslims will smell blood and react with violence. They'll run through the streets, smashing, vandalizing, and burning Jewish stores, attacking Jews in the streets, and destroying their cars and homes. Let us hope and pray that this will never happen. However, one can never know when Hashem will change the gears of history. The lives of people will never again be the same. Now, why should such an idea even enter my mind? A former minister of tourism, Dr. Uzi Landau, revealed a very sickening statistic that from 1948 to the present, less than 15% of the Jews in the United States ever visited Medinat Israel. 15%. Now, it is estimated there are 5 million Jews in the United States, of which 1 million are Torah observant. Let's take that as the ground rules. 15% of 5 million who visit Eretz Israel is 750,000, half of whom are presumably not Torah observant, leaving the number of observant Jews who have been here at 375,000. Numbers don't lie. The numbers reveal that the vast majority of 625,000 out of 1 million religious Jews never step foot on the soil of Hashem's holy land. Among those 625,000, there are principals and teachers in religious day schools, pulpit rabbis, yeshiva and college students, and more, never came here. You can play around with the numbers, 10% here, 10% there. Majority of religious Jews never came here. It has not yet penetrated the minds of the Jews in the Galut that a Father in Heaven is very serious when it comes to religion. Hashem was the initiator of religious Zionism and revealed himself to Abraham and promised him and his descendants sovereignty over Eretz HaKodesh. Religious leaders in the Galut would do well to recognize the awesome responsibility that they have for the physical and spiritual welfare of their adherents. By not guiding them to return home, they will bear the ultimate blame for not doing so. Their responsibility goes even beyond that of the religious leaders of the 1930s in Europe, who saw the black clouds over the horizon, yet they did not use the prestige to arouse their adherents to escape from Europe and return home. Let us hope that in the coming year 5782, the quality of chesed, compassion, will overcome the quality of severe justice, and all Am Yisrael will be united in our holy land, Eretz Yisrael.
Beautiful. There is a much longer Dvar Torah, which you can find on Rav Nachman's website. So I encourage people to go there and to read it. And we wish everyone well, that this year should be a year of simcha and bracha, and that the Jews that are around the world should recognize. First of all, they need to recognize that they're in the wrong place, and think until that switch is made, that they realize that they're in the wrong place, then there's definitely nothing to talk about. Once they realize that exile is not the place that a permanent solution, or can be a permanent solution if they make it so, but then it's not good for anyone. As long as they realize that they're supposed to be there temporarily, then soon they will start making the arrangements that they need in order to come home. And we welcome them. Again, even though the gates right now of Israel are closed to tourists, the Aliyah is completely open. The government is welcoming everybody. They're still giving free flights. I still have not been appointed the minister of Aliyah, so there's no charge, no tax for Jews to come here. It is completely free. And what I do here, which I think is fascinating and is a positive note, is that there are Jews from around the world that are starting to recognize that maybe this is not a permanent solution, and they're starting to purchase properties here in the land of Israel. So you see that real estate here is up, even though Corona, and even though people are purchasing properties without even seeing them. They're just buying right and left properties just in case they need to have an escape route. Again, we always encourage people not to come here as an escape, but to come here for the right reasons, and we hope this will be the year that you'll all be able to do so.
Just like to add, in every neighborhood in Yerushalayim, there are cranes, many cranes building. There hasn't been a building like going on like this for 3,000 years, and they're building big buildings, 20, 30-story buildings. And Yerushalayim has limitation. We can't build to the west because the west, because that's the forest of Yerushalayim. To the north, that's already starts Ramallah. We have the east is limited because the United States won't permit us to build an area between Yerushalayim and Malaya Dumim, because that's going to stop the continuity of the Palestinian state. And so what do? We build high, we build to the top. I've never seen, now, Yerushalayim, I probably Yerushalayim in this high light, in this high day, time of Chizkiyahu, probably even Tzidkiyahu, the last king of Beit Rishon, Yerushalayim probably is not even 1/20th of the area of what it is today. The great Yerushalayim, the crown of the world, was a tiny little town. Wasn't big bichlal. Today, Yerushalayim is just spreading out all over, and people, and beautiful homes, about beautiful houses. And Baruch Hashem, but that's what he said. A baby cries and grows. Yerushalayim, we cry, we complain, and yet we grow all the time in every way.
I was once asked on one of my tours whether if you brought somebody from the times of the Beis Hamikdash to today and show them Yerushalayim, would they recognize it? And I said, of course not. How in the world would they recognize this huge city with this beautiful city that's 50 times larger than the times of David HaMelech, and they would recognize that this is Yerushalayim? Of course not. This is completely foreign. For all the Nevi'im, obviously, they foresaw this as happening. But for your average person living in that time, how would they ever imagine this city growing the way that it has today? And I think that people, Rav Nachman probably can attest to this, that people even that were here in the early days of the state, it's hard to recognize it from those days to today.
Remember when I came to Yerushalayim, it was right after the 60 war, 1967. I came to Israel in 1962. When I came, a car would pass Rehov Yafo once every 3 minutes. Maybe. Okay? I just want to say something about, you're right, somebody would come and live 3,000 years ago and would take a look, you'd just be dumbfounded. Almost just like the Russians, when they came, they went into an Israeli supermarket. They fainted when they saw what was there. See, but one thing, when they do come here, some 3,000 years ago, and you take them around, Josh, you'll be speaking the same language of Ivrit. Probably the only nation in the world that things haven't changed. I remember taking a course in Brooklyn College in Chaucer, English, 500 years ago. It's in a different language. Here it's the same language. You speak to Abraham Avinu, you talk in Ivrit. Not Ivris, in Ivrit.
One of my neighbors, what I call my quiet neighbors on Har HaZeitim, is the family of Yehuda, the Ben Yehudas, Eliezer Ben Yehuda and his family. And on his tombstone, it's written, HaMechaye et HaLashon HaYivrit, that he resurrected the Hebrew language. And then it has next to him his eldest son, Itamar. And it says on his matzeva, HaYeled HaYivri HaRishon, the first Jewish child to be speaking exclusively the Hebrew language in 2,000 years. So,
interesting to note, there was, in the first Aliyah of people from France and Germany in Haifa, and there was a discussion, what should be the language, official language of the new Yishuv, of the new state coming up, new Yishuv. The Frankenfiles wanted French, and the Yekkes wanted German, and Ben Yehuda wanted Ivrit. Now, when the first pilgrims came to the United States, there was discussion among them, what should be the language of the New World? And many of them wanted the language of the Bible. English for England, Ireland, where we came from. But New World, after Ivrit. So it could have been, by a quake of history, that Hebrew could have been the language of America, and German could have been the language of Eretz Yisrael. But Baruch Hashem, it worked out differently.
Aktiva v'chatima tova. Everyone should be written and sealed in the Book of Life, and we only wish that this year will bring the miracles, more miracles that we see unfolding before our eyes every day here.
Thank you for listening to the Bring Them Home Aliyah podcast. If you identify with our message, please subscribe and tell your friends about us too. You can leave us a review on iTunes, as that really helps us grow. We are available on iTunes, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts. For sponsorship opportunities and for all other inquiries, please email us at bringthemhomeisrael@gmail.com. Check out our website at www.israeltorah.org for more content on this vital topic. This is my home.